This online world has become the primary hunting ground for those criminals that are actually prowling for those kids.
36 arrests, including 3 high-value targets arrested, 8 tons of cocaine seized in various instances, and more than 50 million of euros in assets seized.
Society is destabilized by the cooperation, collaboration between criminal networks and terrorist networks and hybrid threat actors. Criminal networks still want to make profit, and it doesn't matter what type of activity that they execute to gain that profit.
Welcome back to the Europol podcast. In the last episode, you heard about the DNA of serious and organized crime. Serious and organized crime is not just a threat to public safety. It impacts the very foundations of the EU and our society. Serious and organized crime has a double destabilizing effect on the EU. It undermines our economy, rule of law, and our society by generating illicit proceeds, spreading violence, and normalizing corruption. But the threat does not stop there. Increasingly, criminal networks serve as proxies for hybrid threat actors, exploiting vulnerabilities to destabilize the EU and its member states from within. Today's episode, how criminal networks destabilize the EU. Drugs, firearms trafficking, hybrid threats, and organized criminal networks recruiting young people to carry out acts of violence, including contract killings. These are a few examples which we will explore in this episode to find out how serious and organized crime is destabilizing the EU. I'm Olivia, and I'm joined today by Andy Krach, the head of the European Serious Organized Crime Center. What is the serious and organized crime landscape today?
I'm just going to give you a couple of highlights, from different perspectives, what we think that's important. For instance, on drugs, if we look at drugs right now, we see this diversification in methods, we see it in routes, and we see it in concealment. And we look at routes, of course, what we always saw is it's cocaine coming from Latin America and it comes to Europe, but you see diversification in routes. So it's not only coming directly from Latin America, it comes through Western Africa. You see diversification in harbors, the big harbors, Rotterdam, Antwerp, and Hamburg. You also see the small harbors, diversification in routes. The same thing goes for methods. It's not only those big containers anymore. It is sail vessels, it is small speedboats dropping off packages in the ocean, which are picked up. It is general aviation. It's all different kind of methods as well. And we also see diversification in concealment. So these criminals, they're constantly adapting, and we need to adapt as well as that. Specifically in drugs, if you look at synthetic drugs, huge influx of, we call it the precursors. So it's the stuff of which synthetic drugs is made of. It comes from China, it comes from India. So we need to tackle the supply chains. And if you look at synthetic opioids, fentanyl, we are alert on every signal there is on maybe fentanyl hitting the streets in Europe.
When you see the cocaine price nowadays in the EU, it's obvious that the price is at the lowest level. What does it mean? It means that you also notice the quality of cocaine is rising, price go down, quality is rising, meaning that the production at the source countries is also rising. So I think that at the moment we have a quite high impact of the production of cocaine, lowest price in Europe, brings us to the conclusion that EU, unfortunately, became one of the key markets for the criminal networks to supply the cocaine.
That was Robert Fay. He is the head of the drugs unit at Europol. I spoke to him to find out more about one of the biggest cases Europol has handled in drug trafficking.
Well, the Operation Adriatica is one of those complex investigations that were successfully finalized and carried out throughout several months, even years. It took the law enforcement officers 3 years to complete the investigation from the initial phase, from the first seizure that happened in the Horn of West Africa until the complete takedown of the leadership and command and control of the people responsible for supplying cocaine. It is complex because of the fact that it was carried out on 3 continents, Latin America, Europe, but also Asia.
Could you paint a picture of this cocaine cartel and their modus operandi?
Yes, basically Adriatica investigation identified the criminal network that operated on several continents. First of all, the law enforcement community was able to identify the criminal cells and the people responsible at the source in Latin America, in this specific case, Brazil, people that were responsible for shipping and supplying the cocaine through the Brazilian ports or through fishing or small pleasure vessels, basically organizing the shipments towards Europe. Second of all, the operation was successful as well because the several logistical headquarters in West Africa were identified. The additional level of the criminal network was based in West Africa, responsible for receiving the shipments from primarily Brazil, stationing and preparing different consignments or different moduses towards the Europe, the ways of transporting towards Europe. Ultimately, the network also had a command and control center that was based out of Europe, predominantly in Turkey or in Dubai. The people that were, we call them command and control, but basically these are the leaders of the criminal organization that are responsible for financing and organizing all the function of the criminal network. And eventually in Europe, also the parts of the network that were identified, ultimately successfully disrupted at the action day, the part of the network responsible for the logistics and the distribution of the product to the European market.
So how many countries were involved in this case?
The various countries from the three different continents. In Latin America, cooperation with Brazil was successfully established. In Europe, we had several EU and non-EU countries, for example, Belgium, Croatia, Germany, Italy, Spain, obviously, but also Serbia as the key cooperating partner in this operation. And we also had some Asian partners, for example, Turkey and United Arab Emirates, cooperating all together in this operation.
So how were the leaders intercepted?
To intercept or to arrest the high-value target or the commander of the criminal network or the leadership of the criminal network, it takes time. Obviously, it takes time. You need to have the accurate intelligence and you need to have a real-time exchange of information with the law enforcement partners. Following these intelligence leads, obviously, at the end, we all want the same. You have the successful position to locate the leadership of the organization, establish cooperation between the countries, and then ultimate arrest of the suspects. And in this specific case, it happened in Istanbul as well as in Dubai itself.
So can you tell us about the operation day itself?
When you break it down, it's quite simple. You have a target that you need to pursue, that you need to locate, you need to arrest, and then you have good guys, a lot of law enforcement power that is being prepared. It sounds easy, and it is easy, but when you need to coordinate on three different continents, then you have additional challenge to do it at the same time in different time zones. For the Operation Adriatica, it was quite simple to establish it because we had different stages of the action day, clampdowns in the Brazil, European countries on the several stages, arrests in the command and control centers in the Istanbul and in Dubai. Overall, the ultimate action took place in the Spain, and it was quite smoothly coordinated with the Spanish law enforcement authorities on the D-Day.
What were the results?
Significant. 36 arrests, including three high-value targets arrested, 8 tons of cocaine seized in various instances, and more than 50 million of euros in assets seized.
What does it mean when a criminal network collapses like this?
Well, let me be clear that protection of the EU and fighting the criminal network starts at the same time in the EU, but also beyond the EU borders. You need to start developing the investigation at the same time, investigating activities that are affecting directly the EU, but you also need to reach out to the non-EU countries at the source or in the logistical centers, for example, like they were targeted in this specific investigation. Why? At the simultaneous development of the investigation and the targeting criminal networks on various stages is the way how you are basically protecting the safety and the security of the EU.
What most concerns you about the state of drug trafficking?
We don't have the luxury of waiting. The drug influx of various drugs towards the EU, but also the drugs production in the EU, it's at the highest level. It's a red flag to the law enforcement inside of the EU to act as quickly as possible.
So this is an individual case. Is this a one in a million case for Europol?
Basically, it is a specific case, but it's not in one in a million. I can confirm that, because now when I joined Europol 10 years ago, it was maybe one of the rare examples of global cooperation. Now, more or less, Europol is, when we are targeting the drug supply affecting the EU, we have cooperation at least with two continents, supply and end market. So you always have a connection between Europe and Latin America, more or less. This, what is a specific indeed, is that we had a really global cooperation of several countries working at the same time. But no, it's not one in a million. We are having more and more such a complex investigation. And in fact, this is a role of Europol to put all bits and pieces together, together with law enforcement, and coordinate such interventions throughout the several months.
Okay, so what would you say made this operation such a success?
The law enforcement response in the Operation Adriatica was the successful real-time cooperation throughout the long period of time. From the initial intelligence development that happened here at Europol, through the feeding the intelligence to the field officers, allowing them to conduct and coordinate the actions at the field, and overall putting the real-time coordination among several countries throughout the period of time, this was the success of the Operation Adriatica, and to be honest, the blueprint of the law enforcement's response towards such criminal networks.
That's only for drugs, but there's more in organized crime. So if you look at weapons as well, the big thing, of course, we have this conflict in Ukraine, lots of weapons. And if you remember back in the days, we had the war in Yugoslavia as well. Lots of weapons. So what's going to happen when the conflict ends? These weapons are still there. And we need to be really careful that these weapons are not being diverted to criminal markets. So that's something you need to be aware of. Same thing goes for developments in technology as well in weapons. It is 3D printers that print out weapons. If you look at migrant smuggling, big thing in Europe. And it's not only physical, this online dimension, everything happens online. The recruitment, trying to lure people in. The payment is with cryptocurrency. There's all these developments in organized crime. And maybe lastly, on violence. Violence has been there for ages, but now violence has also been transferred to youth. So we see youth moving in. And by youth, I mean kids 13, 14, 15 years old who are moving into this violence. So organized crime, you know, it's a big thing. It's a big subject. It is on drugs. It is on migrant smuggling. It is on weapons.
Right. It's a big subject. Let's look at one part in more detail. Europol's latest threat assessment tells us that the exploitation of young perpetrators to carry out criminal acts is a worrying new trend. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, so violence as a service by youth, recruitment of youth. By the way, it's not new. So recruitment of kids by criminals is not new at all. But we see some disturbing developments, and that's why we pushed it out in the SACTA. And first of all, what we see is not only one country. So we see this recruitment of youth, it's spreading out wildfire throughout Europe. It's not one incident, it's not one country. And it's not only just a couple of criminals who are doing it like opportunistically, it's criminal organizations doing it systematically. Basically, it's a deliberate tactics that they have. So it's a tactic to use those kids to shield them from the crime. A second thing that is new is that this recruitment is now online. So most of it is online. So used back in the days, it was the street corners and they recruit 1, 2, 3 kids. Now it is this online world. So basically this online world has become the primary hunting ground for those criminals that are actually prowling for those kids. And why exactly? They think they're anonymous online, those criminals, and also the reach is far bigger. Just to give you some perspective, street corner, 10 kids, an online platform can hold up to 3,000-4,000 kids. So the reach is much bigger. And thirdly, what we see is very disturbing is that those kids, and I constantly call them kids because they're 13, they're 14 years old, they're not just helpers anymore. They're not just runners. They're not just spotters. They're doing the big things. They're doing the extortions. They're doing tortures. They're doing the killing. And those kids are actually being weaponized. They're being used by criminals as a fire and forget weapon. And what I mean with that is we have those weapons. The criminals, they fire them off, those kids, and they forget about it. Those kids are disposable. So those are the big three things that we see throughout Europe. And that's why we are pushing this out, because people need to know this is happening in Europe.
So how is Europol reacting to this?
So this online recruitment of youth, it's a European problem, so it needs a European response. So we launched an OTF, we call an OTF, an operational task force. It's led by Sweden, but there are 8 countries involved, countries that are actually affected by this phenomenon. And to be clear, this is not a task force that is focusing on these kids. So it's not only arresting these kids. We cannot arrest your way out of this. These kids, of course, they are perpetrators, but in some sense, they're also the victims, right? So this task force goes more in depth with an approach. It goes to the recruiters, the people who are actually recruiting those kids. It goes to the instigators, the people who are pulling the strings, who are actually using those kids, and also tries to prevent kids from doing it. So there are 3 big elements in this task force. So first of all, of course, we support the investigations of member states by localizing, by identifying and eventually targeting those recruiters, those top leaders. But we also seek collaboration with those platforms that host these groups in order that we can remove all those content. So kids are not affected by the content, and which we have lots of experience with that on the terrorism side. So we use those experience. And thirdly, it's also about awareness. So you will see people from Europol, people from law enforcement going out there, telling this story and creating awareness. So it's 3 big things, and this task force is actually launched in April and it looks very promising.
Do you want to say something about where the name OTF Grimm has come from?
Of course, you know the Grimm fairy tales, you know the fairy tales, and basically those fairy tales, they're warning kids of these dark figures, these dark alleys. And in a sense, OTF Grimm is doing the same. Yeah, we're warning those kids. But to be clear, it's not a fairy tale anymore. This is happening real time. So we need to stop this. And that's why we're stepping forward.
To find out more about this, I spoke to Tamara Schotter, Head of Strategic Analysis at Europol.
We also see that the online environment is a key place for recruitment of other criminals, and specifically young criminals. So everyone is online, every child is online, every youngster is today online. Criminals have found a dedicated market in that. It's a place where you can easily target people, where you, even with AI, can make a message, can post something to attract youngsters in the language of youngsters in a specific slang, making it very attractive also for youngsters. And by that, you can offer youngsters maybe 5,000 euro to drive to Antwerp and to place a bomb in front of another criminal, maybe. So you see that the online environment is not only to hide communication, is not only there to facilitate crime, to speed up crime, but it's increasingly the platform where, in fact, all the stages of the criminal activities are taking place. From the recruitment of a criminal to the execution of the criminal activities to the laundering of the money, even, it's happening online. Then, because these things are happening online, and because we are today in a society in which you see that AI and new technologies are speeding up also this whole online environment, the impact and the result is, in fact, that these criminal activities that are happening online, we see more victims. We see more people that are targeted by these online crime activities.
There's another side to that story. It's firearms violence and trafficking. Andy, could you tell us about the increase in violence that we're seeing and the role that firearms trafficking is playing in this?
So yeah, firearms trafficking in Europe. Solely firearms trafficking, of course, it is a criminal offense. But also very important, it enables all other kinds of crimes. So it fuels violence. These weapons, these firearms, it fuels violence. And that's why we need to tackle it. And there's a couple of developments that we see. First of all, again, we see a lot of movement from the real world into the online world. So this trading in weapons by these illegal firearms traders is moving to this online world, on these platforms, on these hidden platforms in which we need to dive into. So we see there's lots of technological developments. And one of the most important thing is that we need to be prepared to, and which we are preparing ourselves together with the member states, is what is going to happen geopolitically post-conflict, specifically with Ukraine. Because in Yugoslavia, we saw it just a little bit back in history, the war in Yugoslavia, what we saw there was that huge stockpiles of weapons were there. And what happened there, these weapons were traded with drugs criminals in Latin America. So weapons were traded for drugs. That's how this movement went years ago. In Ukraine now, much more weapons, much more sophisticated weapons. So you can do the math. We need to be prepared on what's going to happen there in organized crime.
Could you tell us about a recent case Europol has been involved in?
So a good example of a weapons trafficking case, which actually makes it clear why we need to tackle weapons trafficking. It's a case, it was a while ago, and it was initiated by Swedish investigators, by the way. So they were discovering that these gangs were going after each other with these weapons. But they were discovering that these weapons were sold by this specific individual, this weapons trader. So together with different countries, with Germany, with Sweden, with Austria and some other countries, we developed this, we supported this operation on this weapons trader, and basically we targeted them, and this weapon trader was arrested. And the point is, it's not only about this guy who was arrested, but the thing is, you disturb the supply chain. So by targeting these weapon traders, you actually disturb the supply chain, the influence of weapons that they have, that fuels the violence. So this is not a really big case. It is a small case, but it is an important case because the secondary effects in violence is much more important as well. These weapons are sold to criminals or criminal gangs, and what they do with those weapons, they use them. They use them at each other. They use them at other people. They're using them at innocent bystanders. They, if you look at violence as a service for kids, they give them to kids, which they recruit online. And then a kid gets a weapon, gets sent away to a different city, gets sent away to a different country to do a contract killing. The kid has no idea. These weapons are used for all kinds of violent things. It fuels violence in Europe.
Moving on to another part of the organized crime landscape. Can you tell us about hybrid threats today?
So a hybrid threat requires a hybrid response from Europol. One of the biggest examples was actually in migration. So migrant smuggling. It was a couple of years ago is when what we saw is that from Belarus, Russia, there was this influx of migrants from Iraq, from Syria, pushing it through the borders of Poland, of Lithuania, of Latvia. And the countries just stepped up. And what we saw was sophisticated criminal groups. They were sophisticated. They had all supply chains in orders. They had their money transfers in orders. But what we also saw, it obvious that there was a state actor behind it, pushing it, doing the influence. And why? Just an attempt to destabilize these states. So we focus on this criminal aspect. We focus on this criminal group. And it was called an OTF, which is now closed. So an operational task force. It was called FLOW. And why am I choosing particularly this example? Because it was an example of a data-driven international network approach. So it was data-driven. We collected lots of data. We connected the dots in all the investigations. It was international. Lots of countries were involved. And it was a system approach. We're not looking at one individual. We're looking at this complete network. So the people in the network responsible for transport, people responsible for the money flows, people responsible for what have you. It was a network approach. So it was a long-term operation. It took about 2 years, but at the end, it was more than 140 arrests in total. But more importantly, we always nominate and we call it HVT, high value targets. And those are the key leaders, the people who are facilitating, the most important people within the network. We nominated 23, and in total, we arrested 21 of them. So in my perspective, these organized crime groups, they were completely dismantled. This approach, this data-driven international network approach, is actually the only approach that actually is successful. And in this case, this migrant smuggling case also had this hybrid context because we see it was a push from other countries. But it was one of the most successful cases that the European Migrant Smuggling Center, which is part of my department, had in the previous years.
So that's the situation regarding hybrid threats. But where do they come from exactly?
The hybrid threats have always been there. So we know that certain countries always have tried, or certain regions always have tried to destabilize something which is called the European Union. So the European Union is something strong. It's a group of countries protecting their economy, trying to cooperate also with other nations, trying to protect its citizens. Some wants to destabilize this for their own economic and political goals, for their own political gains. Don't forget that certain state actors made a statement a few years ago, we are going to flood the EU with synthetic drugs. Well, we see it happening. We see an increase of synthetic drugs coming from certain regions towards into the EU. But it could also be that it's linked to migrant smuggling. So cybercrime, drugs trafficking, but migrant smuggling. What is called the instrumentalization of irregular migration is in fact certain states pushing migrants into our countries, all with the goal to destabilize. Because the goal of this hybrid threat actor, of this state actor, is not to make money himself. No, it's just to destabilize our society. So one of the goals of this hybrid threat actors is indeed that the European citizen, we normal people, don't believe anymore in the public institutions, in our governments, don't trust our bank anymore.
Right. We've heard about drug trafficking, firearms, hybrid threats, and how organized criminal networks are recruiting young people to carry out acts of violence. But how does this all come together to destabilize the EU?
What we in fact see today is a double destabilization of our society by serious and organized crime. So the double D. So what does that mean, the double D? First of all, we see a destabilization by the money laundering. The ultimate goal of criminal networks is to make profit. That profit is used to reinvest in other criminal activities, or it is used to reinvest in our society. It's used to buy a house. It's used to buy normal daily goods. It's used to invest in luxury goods. So it's in fact these things that are destabilizing your normal society. So by the criminal money, by the profits that are made, your society, your economy is undermined, is destabilized. But what is the second thing that we now see and that we increasingly see in the past 2 years, in fact, is that the society is also destabilized by the cooperation, collaboration between criminal networks and terrorist networks and hybrid threat actors. What is in fact happening? Criminal networks still want to make profit. And for some criminal networks, it doesn't matter what type of activity that they execute to gain that profit. If a hybrid threat actor is approaching them and saying, you can make some profit for if you are executing certain activities for me, some criminal networks say yes to that. And that's what we see. They gain, in fact, twice profits by using a certain infrastructure and also by that money that they get. It's not only the destabilization by the investment of the criminal money in our society, it's also the fact that you see this increased collaboration between hybrid threat actors and, of course, these criminal actors. And we see it in the area of cybercrime, but you also see it already in the area, for example, of drugs trafficking networks. So summarized, we have this dual destabilization effect by the investment of criminal money into our societies and our economies, and by the fact that we have also the destabilization now of hybrid threat actors that cooperate with these criminal networks and want to destabilize our society.
So that's all we have time for today. You've heard about crime as destabilizing, the first part of the new DNA of serious and organized crime. Stay tuned for our next episode, which will take you behind the scenes of how crime is nurtured online. Together, we'll find out about more of Europol's biggest cases in the areas of cybercrime and fraud. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Europol podcast. Please subscribe and give us a rating on whatever platform you're using to listen. And if you enjoyed the show, maybe consider sharing the podcast on your social media. If you want to hear more about our work making Europe safer, you can always check out our website. That's europol.europa.eu. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you soon.